We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
9:37, 9:38, 22 before 10, the Supreme Court has come down on their reading with Roe v. Wade. Our friend David Schultz joins us, a professor of political science at Hamline University. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm great. How about you today?
I'm okay. Thanks for hopping on such short notice. Before we talk about this ruling, let's put this into some historical context, if we can, and talk about the history of abortion and the legality of it in the United States since its inception, really.
Sure. Okay. So if we take, let's say, 1776, you know, Declaration of Independence, or 1787, you know, when our Constitution was written, from that point until the late 19th century, abortion was largely unregulated in the United States. And what I mean by unregulated, there were really no laws that addressed this issue. And starting in the late 19th century is when states started to make laws regulating abortion. And the main reason why they did at that point was, for lack of a better term, as modern medicine was starting to develop, there were a lot of quacks out there, you know, kind of like charlatan doctors who were doing things. And they really sort of adopted it in the late 19th century as a way of protecting women's health against bad medical procedures, et cetera, like that. But then starting in the early 1960s, several states, if I remember correctly, about 11 states decriminalized or legalized abortion at that point, leading up to Roe v. Wade in 1973, where with Roe v. Wade, what the court then did was to say that the Constitution protects the right of a woman to terminate a pregnancy if she so wishes. But if we look at the lion's share of American history, the first 100 years or so, and then the last 50 years, largely abortion has been legal.
There had been tremendous medical advances made. I don't think people realize how much medicine advanced between late 1800s and early 1900s, and maybe early to mid 1900s, how far medicine came. And how barbaric in a lot of ways and how simplistic it was in the late 1800s. So I guess I'm wondering, in terms of social connotation of this, not medical, was it frowned upon by society as far as you know in the early days? Or
If we're talking about, let's say most of the 19th century, not so much frowned upon, more or less not talked about. We do know that there were lots of stories of people abandoning their children if they couldn't afford, if they couldn't afford to raise them. We do know there were all kinds of, I don't know what I'm going to call them, home remedies for how to try to, terminate or abort a fetus and so forth. But in terms of it being an intensely, let us say, religious issue, that really wasn't the history of it through most of the 19th century. And I'm going to even say that the basis of the regulations in the 20th century up until Roe were less based upon religion than they were based upon, let us say, a combination of medical protection. And we have to admit, probably some sexism, too, in terms of efforts to try to restrict women's freedom or women's ability to do things with their bodies.
All right, so let's go to this ruling. I get a text from somebody very early on that says nothing in the Constitution about abortion. That was bad law that was reversed, but keep saying it was a constitutional right, just stirring the pot. You know, we just heard the ruling, and there's a lot more to say, but it is a very emotional issue for a lot of people. What does the Constitution say about this? And in terms of the Supreme Court's ruling, how are they using the Constitution to say that you do not have a constitutional right to it? What exactly does a ruling say? Maybe would be a better way to ask this.
Okay, so what happened back in the early 1960s is the Supreme Court issued an opinion, Griswold versus Connecticut, that said the Constitution has a, even though it's not written anywhere, there's a right to privacy. And in Griswold, what the court said, if I think of the right to privacy as a bucket, in that bucket of privacy, the court said the right to privacy includes the right of married couples to use birth control. Then eventually it said the right of unmarried couples to use birth control. What Roe does is to build on those decisions and to say that the right to privacy also includes a right of a woman to make a decision to terminate a pregnancy. What the court does with the Dobbs opinion is to say a right to privacy still exists. However, within that, again, if I can use that metaphor of a bucket, that bucket does not include a right to terminate a pregnancy. And instead, it leaves it up to the federal government and state governments to make decisions regarding abortion.
So as far as that goes, then, if I'm hearing this correctly, this is the first time that the Supreme Court has ruled in saying that you do not have a right, a constitutional right to have an abortion, or are they saying it's up to the states? Where does that fit in all of this?
They're really saying at this point it's up to the states to get to make their decision. They're saying that we're going to send it back to where it was before 1973, where the states get to make decisions regarding if women have a right to terminate a pregnancy, if at all, if they do, under what conditions they can do it. And what this decision does is to say states could do nothing. They could just say women are free to terminate pregnancies. They can pass their own laws and do what they want. Or conversely, they're free to say they could ban all abortions. And that's important to understand here, because what the decision doesn't say is that, okay, there's a right to abortion. There's no right to abortion, but women have a right to terminate a pregnancy, you know, if their health is in danger or something. This is basically saying all the choices, all the discretion regarding if and under what conditions a pregnancy may be terminated is left up to the government, up to the political process.
Even to the point of if a state legislature deems that a woman has to carry a baby to term, even if her health is affected or it could cost her her life, that decision then is taken out of her hands if the state legislature decides that that's the way they want to go.
Absolutely correct. And the same thing in cases of rape or incest also. It basically leaves it up to the discretion of our public officials, our elected officials, to make the decision regarding when a woman can terminate, again, when, if at all, she can terminate her pregnancy.
Does this have any effect, and I don't want to get too graphic here or anything, but does this affect anything like in forms of stillbirth or anything like that, where a woman would be forced to carry the child to term even if there was no viable fetus?
Well, at this point, given the fact that...
Am I getting far in the weeds here?
I don't think you're getting too far in the weeds. I may be being redundant here in saying that what the court said is that this is all the call of the state legislature and the government now. They get to make those decisions. Now, you would hope, I may be expressing more of my views than I should. You would hope that state legislatures would say at some point in the scenario that you gave that it would be, ridiculous to force somebody to carry a stillborn child to birth. Or if I can use that phrase, I'm not a medical doctor, so I don't know what the right terms are.
Neither me.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but theoretically, they could do that, I guess.
So it's up to each state legislature. The recent polling, CBS YouGov poll, this was done not too long ago. At 65% of Americans wanted the Roe v. Wade decision to stay as it was. 35% had wanted it overturned. More polling said that in your state, people, 33% thought it should be legal in most places, 32 legal in most, 23 illegal in most, 12 illegal in most. And I guess the question I'm asking is politically now, does this have any effect on legislatures, or are legislatures already reflecting the conservative views of the people where they would make abortion illegal, and conversely, the states where it is still legal, where they are just reflecting their constituencies? So I guess what I'm wondering is, do you see any big political effect of this in terms of parties changing parties losing power in the state houses, et cetera?
I don't at this point, but what's interesting now is that for individuals who've opposed Roe, who've opposed abortion, you know, for 50 years, they've passed lots of laws. Most of the time, they've been struck down by the court. Well, now they have the opportunity to have their laws go into effect if they want. And the question will be, how will the voters, including, you know, female voters, you know, view this issue? So that's going to be one interesting, because now your votes, you introducing that bill, actually matters at this point. It's not just sort of symbolic. But across the country, we're going to have a pattern. We're going to have some states where abortion is going to be legal, some it's going to be illegal, some it's going to be somewhere in between. You have some states that had what were called snapback laws that said that if Roe were overturned, their old laws automatically go into place. And so we probably are going to have a 50-state pattern in which, depending on which state you live in and what state law says or state constitution says, women are going to have different rights to abortion depending on where they live.
Tim, I'm going to pass on the 50 update here because I want to stick with our guest, David Hamlin, David Schultz here, professor of political science at Hamlin University. Clarence Thomas, in his opinion, concurring opinion, wrote that they should reconsider the gay marriage ruling. Does that then invite those that would challenge gay marriage to file in other words, patient almost to say, okay, we'll be friendly for overturning the gay marriage ruling if anybody wants to make a case for?
Yeah, it will at this point. I mean, for years, the court signaled, including Clarence Thomas, that they ought to challenge Roe versus Wade. This is a clear signal at this point. And given the fact that they've overturned this major precedent, you know, 50 years, and the Supreme Court overturns very, very few precedents, this statement now by Thomas is saying, well, now it's time to go after, perhaps go after gay marriage, is also a signal. And this is really quite disturbing. You know, I'm going to try to say this again, politically neutral here, is that the whole principle of following precedent is to say that once something has been decided, it's supposed to be settled law, and the court's not supposed to go back generally and say, well, I disagreed with that. You know, I don't know about you, but most of us plan our lives based upon some kind of expectation of the future that, you know, I'm hoping that the decision I make today based on certain conditions I make today will be true in the future. So now think about not just for women, you know, who now have to maybe rethink a variety of things in life, but what if now gay marriage were to be overturned? The implications of that for, I don't even know how many millions of couples there are who are gay who are married. It's just not a statistic I have. But yeah, I mean, this really opens up a lot here. And also, if you're willing to say that the right to privacy doesn't include a right to abortion, well, what about a right to use birth control? Because that's nowhere written explicitly in the Constitution either. So a lot of things now are up for challenge that were not up for challenge before.
regardless of how you feel about gay marriage, in terms of people saying that the Supreme Court is now becoming a legislative body, which they were not intended to do, I just wonder how odd is it that, or how out of place is it that Clarence Thomas, in essence, would invite people to challenge the previously established ruling on gay marriage, saying that they would be almost in favor of overturning it, given the conservative majority of the court. And it almost seems as though he's kind of putting the court in the legislative process. Am I wrong there or not?
No, I think it's accurate. For everybody who criticized the Warren Court, the liberal court of the 50s and 60s, and used phrases like, you know, it's legislating from the bench or it's making policy, there's a sense in which Thomas's statement is doing the exact same thing. It's no different than a state legislator introducing a bill and saying, let's ban gay marriage. And so think about it at this point. His signal sends a signal to state legislatures. So let us say, for example, some state now says, we're going to pass a law and ban gay marriage, even though it's currently legal in the United States. What his signal does is to encourage states to attack gay marriage, with the hope, perhaps, he's thinking, that maybe a case will get it up to the Supreme Court and will overturn that. So many of us, you know, and I'm a law professor also, many of us consider that type of action by justices to be completely inappropriate, because that's not what justices are supposed to do. They're not elected. Policy should generally be made by elected officials. But we also have to keep in mind, in our political system, we try to balance making a policy and majority rule with minority rights. I think most of us hope would accept the idea that the government can't pass a law, even if 99% of the American public did not like Tommy Tucker, that can't pass a law that bans you from the airways because they don't like the content. That's freedom of speech. That's freedom of press. And so at some point, we need to figure out that balance.
We're out of time, sir. I appreciate your time. I really do. We got to go. I appreciate it. Thank you. And dog whistles coming all pitches back in a flash. WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.